This is the Paper Planes podcast, where we take a deep dive into some of the week's most notable business and marketing stories and interview high-performing business leaders and marketing professionals to find out their lessons for success.
Shopify is great because it's fully hosted. WordPress is fantastic if you want to be able to do everything. Magento is really for someone who's building a larger store. So I don't understand the technical, but I understand how something should work. Doesn't necessarily give you customers straight away, return on investment straight away.
Welcome to the Paper Planes podcast, episode number 60, and thank you very much for tuning in and welcome back. If you've listened to a Paper Planes podcast before, and if you're new to us, then welcome as well. And after you've listened to this one, get a chance to have a look back at some of the other ones that we've done in the past couple of years. There's some amazing people and some amazing interviews that we have been lucky enough to put together. So before we mention who we're talking about today, let's just get all the housekeeping out of the way. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We would very, very much appreciate that. If you are listening through iTunes, then it's very easy to do. Even if you can't write a review, then even if you just hit the stars button, hopefully five stars, then that would be appreciated. Come and find us on Instagram. We are flypaperplanes.co on Instagram. That is also our web address. Our business name is Paper Planes. If you are looking for any help in digital marketing, digital automation, anything from an online perspective, then please come and talk to myself or Matt. As I say, our website is flypaperplanes.co. And you can email me at simon@flypaperplanes.co as well. And come and talk to me on Instagram as well. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. Love to engage with people. Let them tell us what they think of the show. If they've enjoyed a particular episode, that would be fantastic. And finally, thepodcastboss.com is Gilberto. He is our sound engineer. He does all of our editing and all of our intros and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So he has been a staple of this show since day one. So we wouldn't be able to do that without him as well. So look, if you're looking to get yourself a podcast up and running, he is the man to speak to. Now, who do we have on the show today? We have a lady by the name of Holly Cardew, originally from Sydney and now based in Melbourne, in Brisbane, in Silicon Valley, pretty much all over the place, wherever she needs to be. She runs an organization called Pixie. That is spelt P-I-X-C. Their website is pixc.com, so pixie.com. They are imaging editing software. I'll explain what it is in the actual podcast itself, in the interview itself, but Holly is the founder and CEO of that. She started that 5 years ago. She has a long background in e-commerce. She has been listed as a Forbes 30 Under 30 Asia Emerging Entrepreneur, and she has built her entire business with a distributed team, which means there is no head office. There is people all over the world, and she has 20 staff in different parts of the globe. So look, if you're interested in e-commerce, if you're interested in startups, if you're interested in building startups and marketing any kind of business, then Holly has got a lot to say, a lot of interesting insights. So enjoy that interview. Otherwise, before we go and dive into that, just once again, thank you for listening in. So let's get on and listen to Holly. Welcome to the show, Holly Cardew. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks for having me today.
Awesome. You're in Melbourne at the moment, aren't you? Because we've just had a conversation where I guessed all the spaces that you were and you weren't in any of them. So,
yes, I'm in Melbourne this week.
And how is sunny Melbourne in autumn?
It is actually sunny, and surprisingly, it's going to be quite warm today. But, you know, they say four seasons in a day, and it is very true. You need to have different outfits for different times of the day.
Oh God, I hate Melbourne, but not only for that reason. But you know. Now, as I alluded to, I kind of tried to guess where you were, and you've sort of said to me that you tend to be all over the place because you, as the boss and CEO of Pixie, have a distributed and remote team. So I guess what we want to do is start off by explaining what that actually is.
Yeah, it's a question I get asked a lot because it is a challenge. You know, where is your HQ? And I mean, of course, on paper, we're registered in multiple locations, but we are a distributed team. And what that means is that there is no one physical office where everybody comes every day. We have people who are around the world, literally in Europe, in America, in Asia, and Australia, who all work on the team, product, customer service, and marketing.
Okay. And how many people would that be?
We have about 20 people at the moment, okay, including some part-time contractors.
And roughly how many locations have you got those across?
Or 12 locations.
Okay.
12.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Any sort of really unusual ones that we should know about? I mean, not unusual people, I mean unusual locations.
I mean, I think the most unusual location that I had last year was a contractor working from Georgetown.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't even know. Where is Georgetown?
It is in South America.
Okay.
Yeah, right. So very cool. Different, very small country. And so that was very different for me. But I would say most people... We have engineers over in Europe, so, you know, the UK, yeah. Berlin. We have content people in America. We have people in the Philippines, Sri Lanka, Australia, you know, lots of different places.
Are there some that you've never met?
Yes, there are actually. And it was funny because some people I've been working with for, you know, 4 years, 3 to 4 years, and I hadn't met them. And last year I made a conscious effort to meet people, and I think I met about 15 out of the 20.
Okay.
So quite a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is quite good, yeah.
And how do you, I mean, what's the biggest challenge? I mean, obviously, I guess there to a degree is a bit of a language challenge, although I suspect English is a fairly kind of, you know, most people have a fairly decent level of English that are working with you. But what are some of the other bigger challenges of dealing with a distributed team like that?
I mean, we've done it quite well in terms of our communication. We have regular meetings. I think the biggest challenge would be is the cultural barriers. Right. You need to find people who have the same sort of mindset in a way, even though they come from different backgrounds. But right. At the end of the day, people have different work ethics, or they have different, you know, mentalities, or the way they've grown up has been very different to, you know, Western culture. So you can pick out people who have a similar mindset who can work really well together, but it is still a bit of a challenge. You know, I'll say that the Eastern Europeans are very straightforward, and then people in Asia will be very polite.
Right.
So I think giving people permission, and this is what I try and do on my teams, giving people permission to speak up and giving them permission to fail and make mistakes. Because in some countries or some cultures, it's not accepted to make a mistake. It's not accepted to speak up to your boss or your team members or your manager. So I really encourage that.
How do you – I guess the thing a lot of people look at with distributed remote teams is their struggle to understand whether people are actually doing what they're supposed to be doing. And obviously there's a – you know, it's difficult for people to let go of that concept that if someone's coming into the office for 8 hours, they know they're there for 8 hours and they know what they're going to be working on for those 8 hours. How do you deal with that kind of management of making sure people are actually doing what they're supposed to be doing?
Yeah, so for me, I get this question quite a bit as well. For me, it's really about building that trust, and it comes back to your values. So the values of the company, and one of our big ones is trust and honesty and being transparent. And also the other thing is that as a founder or as a CEO or boss or manager, I'm not about how many hours you sit at your desk. That doesn't mean to me, that doesn't mean anything. Somebody could sit at a desk in an office in Melbourne, doesn't mean that they're productive. So I'm all about the output. So we have goals, weekly goals, monthly goals in different teams, and we all working towards those goals. And if I see someone who's not working towards those goals, or who is not becoming better at their job or striving to improve their team, improve the people around them, then I realize that it's not working, and that's when we decide to part ways.
Okay. Let's talk about Pixie, because that was one of the points we were here, and we haven't actually even mentioned them yet. Just for the benefit of everybody listening, Pixie in this sense is spelt P-I-X-C, and the domain is pixc.com. Give us the sort of 30-second rundown as to what Pixie actually does, because it's got a very, very specific kind of use.
Yeah, we do have a very specific use, and what we do is we automate image editing and image processing for online merchants. So we connect directly with their e-commerce store. We're able to pull all of their content, fix it using algorithms and designers on demand, and push it back within 24 hours.
So just for the simple-minded who are perhaps listening to that, that really is something like a e-commerce store uploading a photo that they've taken of, let's say, a handbag that they're wanting to sell, and that your system, your algorithm, is going to remove all the background, clean it up, make it look presentable for the e-commerce store.
Yes, you're very good at pitching, Simon.
I may have actually done some research for this one, Colin. Holly, getting your name wrong there as well. Yeah, so I think it's a fantastic piece of technology. And the other thing earlier on, I said that you were the CEO. Am I right in that, or is there a CEO? You were the founder, but is there a different CEO, or do you act as the CEO?
No,
as well?
I act as the CEO as well.
Okay, cool. So I have interviewed people where the CEO isn't necessarily the founder. In some startups, which you can find. So before we go into Pixie, I don't know what's going on with me this morning. I must have been drinking last night.
Too early, not enough coffee.
Too early, no. Yeah, not enough coffee. That's probably exactly it. Before we go sort of in depth into Pixie and understand that and how that started and so on and so forth, you have a fairly comprehensive background in e-commerce, which, when you look at your background, sort of kind of appeared out of nowhere. I can see that you kind of got a business development manager job, and somehow within that you've ended up in an e-commerce space. Explain to me that kind of your first taste of e-commerce and how that all happened.
Yeah, funny you mentioned that. There's some things I can't put on LinkedIn, and one of them is, and you wouldn't have found it, is when I was 14, I started selling handbags on eBay.
So right, okay.
A long time ago, I realized there was not really many online stores, and the handbags that I wanted were from France, and everybody at high school had them, and the only place you could get it was David Jones. And I knew in France it was about half the price, and I just thought it was absolutely ridiculous that David Jones could have such a high markup on it. You know, I probably didn't understand tax at that point of time and, you know, import duties and all those import things, but duties, I still thought it was crazy. So I decided
a 14 years old, you don't really care, do you? You know, it's
no.
Like, who import duties? Yeah, no, forget that.
Exactly.
Anyway, go on, sorry.
So I decided to get my friend to send me some handbags, and I sold them on eBay, and I realized they would go really quickly. And so I was really interested in that. I think also at a very young age, I mean, even younger, maybe when I was 12, my mom was using Woolworths to shop online because there were three of us, and she just couldn't do work full time and rush to the supermarket and do everything. So she would get our groceries delivered, and she would show me how it worked, and she would make her, you know, her wish list sort of thing. And they would have the order history on there. So from a young age, I was very interested in online and the internet, of course. And then it also expanded into, I had a part-time job, actually. I don't know if you know this company, but Appliances Online.
Yes, now. Yes.
So I was employee number 8. And actually, funnily enough, and I totally forgot about this because it was only a part-time job, I was uploading product images for their website.
Okay.
And I was putting on all the watermarks, and I was doing all the listings. So I really saw, I really liked the side of e-commerce. And then the biggest problem that I saw as well was there was so much manual work involved in running a store. And what was happening is that there were these traditional retailers who wanted to be online, and they were really good at in-store retail. They were good at sourcing products. They were good at being with their customer. They had no idea how to Photoshop an image. They had no idea how to write a product description. They had no idea how to upload it onto a website. And so all of these things compounded, and that's when I started actually helping build e-commerce stores while I was living in remote Australia.
Back to your eBay days, because I'm quite interested, you know, in that, in the 14-year-old girl that's decided she's going to start importing handbags from France. Did you, was that sort of, you know, doing that on your own pocket money, or did you sort of tap up your parents for a loan, or were you, I mean, you said you had a friend in France. Were you sort of doing that on consignment so that you weren't paying them until you'd sold at the other end?
No, it was no full-fledged business, unfortunately. And I have been very independent from a very young age and have never asked my parents for any money other than my pocket money. And at that time, it would have been, I don't know, $50 or $20 a week. I can't remember. Or maybe it was $50 a month. But yeah, I always, yeah. I mean, I worked the day I turned 14 and 9 months, which is the legal age to work. I worked at McDonald's, and I've had a job ever since. And prior to that, I was helping friends pack sponges for their cleaning company. Like, I always knew the value of working and getting money in return.
Where did you pick that up from? Is that something that your parents taught you, or is that just?
I don't know. They didn't really, because my brother's the opposite. But I think I don't like to rely on people, and I think that's what it came down to. I do know my mom tells me at a very young age, when I was two, I would walk around saying, "I do it myself." And I think that's always been the case. Like, I can do these things by myself. I think I need to learn to rely on people more, because sometimes it can have its downsides. But I think it really helped me to go work and get a job and do, you know, whatever I wanted to. My parents always said to me that I can do whatever I want or be whatever I want, even if they can't give me the opportunity because they don't necessarily have the money to fund it. But it's all possible. Yeah. And I think I really saw that from a young age.
How was Macca's as a job? That's one of the ones I've never done, but it was good.
It was really good. You know why? The system's changed now when I go into McDonald's, but you had 60 seconds countdown on your computer to take an order and deliver it to the customer.
Wow.
Okay. And at a young age, you saw this whole process that they had.
Yeah.
And they had rules and set schedules for things, and it really taught you, okay, I've got 60 seconds, I take the order within 20 seconds and I deliver it within the 40 seconds that are left. And I think that was amazing. So I actually thought it was a good chance for me to learn about processes and the way things work.
You've obviously done a lot in e-commerce, starting from the days of, you know, selling handbags on eBay through to where you are now. You've done some, I think you had yourself a little agency as well that was helping other people get online at some point. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. Or as a freelancer contractor. Right. But yes, I did do that for quite a while.
You obviously still understand the space, you know, probably better than most people out there. When you look at e-commerce now, if someone wanted to go into an e-commerce space now, what sort of advice would you be giving them?
I think going into e-commerce, and there's so many brands that are still, companies that are still not online, and what you need to do is you need to build a brand. So many people just put up an online store and they don't create any content or any marketing material around a brand. They just have a product. And gone are the days where, like, you go to a trade fair and you have a product, and down the road, the same company, like another shop, has the same product. You need to be able to differentiate yourself. Otherwise, consumers can just jump around from different stores to see who has the best price or the best shipping deal. And of course, you need to provide that. But I think there are people who are really loyal to a brand, consumers who are loyal to brands. And so if you can build a brand around your product, even if it's not your own individual product, people will come and be attracted to that.
I'm also interested, you know, you've obviously worked with all the different platforms out there. And I had a little note here that sort of had the three major, what I would probably consider the three major platforms, and talking about the pros and cons of them. And I suspect we could probably go into this for an hour, but I'm just kind of interested to understand your thoughts on WordPress versus Magento versus Shopify. And understand what you think are the, I don't necessarily want you to say which one's the best. I just kind of want to understand from your perspective, where you would sort of direct people to go if they were starting a business or growing a business, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it really depends on the needs of the company that's starting the store. Shopify is great because it's fully hosted. I get quite involved in forums and Facebook groups, and I see people saying, oh, I want to start an online store. I'm going to start with WordPress. WordPress is fantastic if you want to be able to do everything. But if you are non-technical and you don't have a technical person in store or in your team who is going to spend their time managing and building and coding, then don't start with WordPress, right? Because you want to make all these custom changes. And then the worst thing is that I love WordPress, and I do, well, it's WooCommerce that plugs into WordPress to create the online store. It's extremely powerful, but you do need someone who's going to code for you, and you do need to look after your own security. Whereas if you go to something like Shopify, they manage all the security, they manage all the hosting. And when I say hosting, it means that if you have a sudden spike during Christmas, your website isn't going to crash because Shopify looks after those servers. Whereas WordPress, you might say, oh, I'm starting out, I'm just going to go to a small hosting company, I'm going to get a small server, and then it crashes, or somebody hacks your database. And then it can actually get really expensive. So some people look at Shopify and they say it's expensive, but then they don't think of the actual cost of having a developer full time. And then Magento is really for someone who's building a larger store that has multiple warehouses and facilities where they need to connect multiple stores and multiple distribution centers, which Shopify have now brought out Shopify Plus for enterprise. So they are competing on that level.
Yeah.
So more and more people are moving from Magento to Shopify Plus, but also some people are staying on Magento just because that's what they know. And then the other option is something like BigCommerce, which was started here in Australia, which is similar to Shopify. And they're quite good for B2B. So if you're a wholesaler wanting to sell to other retailers.
Okay.
And then there is also Neato, they're actually based in Queensland.
Yes.
They're good as well. They're good for Australia with their shipping options. I've spoken to some people who have used Neato specifically for their shipping. And then for someone who's starting out selling one or two products, like you want to sell an ebook or something, you can start with something very small like Squarespace e-commerce.
Yeah. There's a lot of good tools out there now, and I think probably
there's so many most tools.
Yeah, I think a lot of people get caught up by overanalyzing what they should be using.
Yes.
And I actually think what you've just said there in a few minutes kind of actually really sums them all up very, very well. What are some of the other tools that you use out there, and I mean, you know, not just within Pixie, but some of the other, you know, similar things to like you know your own business, but you know, cool online tools that you think people should look at and people should use?
Oh, so many tools. There are so many.
I should have given you a bit of prep on this one, but I know.
Yeah. I think there's that's a hard question. I mean, there's so many different ones depending on what you need. I think when I started out in e-commerce, I didn't even know to have a support desk. I just used our normal email.
Yeah.
So I think setting up, you know, live chat and customer support is really important. You can use Zendesk, you can use Intercom. There's a ton of different chat tools out there.
I was going to say, we're using Intercom with a client actually, and they really like that. So, you know, but I think those two are kind of at the top of the pile at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. There's also Drift, which is competitive to Intercom. I think what's interesting about e-commerce is not many people take advantage of a live chat. They just say, oh, I don't have time, there's so many questions. And it's like, but if it closed more sales, wouldn't you try it?
Yeah.
So, like, even if you turn it on for 3 days a week, or even if you turn it on for a month and see what happens, or turn it on, you know, 2 hours in the morning, it's just that opportunity to actually talk to your customer.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, people are missing by not having support or live chat is that when somebody asks for a product or something that they're looking for and you think it's obvious, you think, oh, yeah, it's there stashed under t-shirt category or the cup category. but they couldn't find it. So that actually gives you insights into what you should be changing with your website. I think the other things and going on insights is Hotjar. Hotjar is like a heat map tracking tool. So that can be really good, and you can track funnels and see what people are doing.
That's like that's a rabbit warren for me, Hotjar is, because once you start recording people's visits, you're just sitting there going, I'll watch this one, and then, oh no, I'll watch another one, and then I'll watch another one, and all of a sudden hours have gone by and you've watched God knows how many Hotjar recordings. And you get great insights from them, but I often find Hotjar, the struggle I have with Hotjar is it tends to create more questions than it answers for me. But anyway.
I think that's anyway, all analytics and metrics software, which is quite hard. I think it's important to, that's why you set up funnels on Hotjar to see so a funnel can be, I'm not sure if you've used the feature, but you know, somebody lands on the page and signs up for an account, and how many people drop off at which page or which stage. So you try and lead them through a funnel. So that can help with your UX design.
Right. Okay. What about e-news and marketing automation? Anything that you've sort of seen in that sort of space that you'd recommend?
Well, we definitely use Intercom for our marketing automation. So not just our live chat. It acts as our CRM, and then we can have different messaging for them. We still use MailChimp, good old MailChimp. And lately we've been using Lead Pages. So Lead Pages has been really good for us because, well, they're expanding into different into sites and, you know, creating websites and things like that. But what's been really handy about Lead Pages is because our front end is custom developed by our engineering team, it's quite challenging for a marketing person to just go in there and create stuff. So our engineers have created, so when we create a page on Lead Pages, it automatically pops up onto our website domain. So now we can build all these pages. We can A/B test any of them. We can create them however we want to create them. We can have opt-ins, and we can have them sitting on our domain. Okay. So that's been really powerful as well.
What about, you mentioned analytics. What do you look at in terms of understanding, you know, visitor data and things like that? What's, you know, are you one of those sort of people who checks it every day or every hour or, you know?
Not that much. I wish I had that much time. I do get a report to my email every day from our database that has an overview of a lot of different numbers, but it's quite good because it compares on the previous week or the previous, that day from the previous week. And then also reports monthly. What we're really looking at is new visitors, customer retention, and you have returning visitors, which is part of the retention piece.
Yeah. I'm sure you don't want to share data, but you know, what sort of lifetime do you have for your users? Are they people that come in and use it for a couple of weeks, or do you generally, you know, once Pixie gets their hooks in people, you've kind of got them for a long time?
Yeah, our core customer is usually around for 3 to 4 years. Okay. They are a medium-sized business. So, I mean, it's still quite challenging to see because some people may be a VP of e-commerce at a company. And so technically their lifetime may be 2 years, but actually they move on to another company and they pick us up again at another company.
Right.
So that's quite a challenge for us to accurately calculate the lifetime value of the customer. But our core customer, you know, we've had customers be with us from, you know, the first year that we started.
Well, let's sort of take that opportunity now to talk a little bit more about Pixie then. With that in mind, how do you guys find new clients? What are the core channels from a marketing perspective that drive new signups for you?
Yeah, so our core channels are content marketing, so our blog, ebooks, and also marketing with partners, so with other Shopify app teams or other software companies that have a similar customer.
Yep.
We also get a lot of leads from our app stores, so from, for example, the Shopify app store. We have a plugin with Shopify, BigCommerce, WooCommerce, and Magento. So that drives quite a bit of traffic. And then we also do sales outreach, so reaching out to stores or reaching out to businesses that we know who will need our services. So they're our main three channels, but we also do some testing. We haven't really done any paid ads. We also do some testing within forums and different okay. Facebook groups.
I'm interested to understand the outreach one, because I'm one of the people that is on generally the end of the outreach emails from software companies like yourself.
So am I.
And I know, I was going to say, I bet you are as well. I know. how do you... And actually, when I do strategy sessions now with clients, big or small, I actually now have a line in the strategy discussion about outreach and email outreach, because it's they're dirty words to a degree, but I don't think people can afford to ignore them now as a potential, you know, lead and business generation tool. Because we've actually started responding to some. Sometimes we get them through now, and we actually go, you know what? That's actually a pretty good tool, you know. And how do you phrase an outreach email that doesn't end up with a, you know, a string of expletives coming back to you?
So we make it quite targeted. I think we could do. We have lots of different approaches, because not one approach is ever right. Yeah. And it's always changing. And in the 4 years that I've been in business, 5 years, it's really changed. You know, people used to respond more, but now everyone gets emails. We look for specific patterns. So, and a pattern would be a core customer that uses us, they also go to a trade fair at a certain time of the year. And before that trade fair, they needed to prepare their image catalog or their product catalog. Therefore, we reach out 3 months before that trade fair, and we mention that trade fair and mention that we can help them with a certain problem.
Right, right.
So it's quite specific, but we do know also that if that person goes to that trade fair and has a stall at that trade fair, then they're more likely to have money to spend on this sort of thing.
Yeah.
So there are certain patterns, and you just need to try different things, unfortunately. Need to target them so we can target people who have their images edited or haven't edited their images before. So all sorts of
Some of them take it quite badly that you're telling them their images need some work?
Previously some have, but yeah. Most people know that it's not good enough, and they're desperate to get more sales or more conversions, so they'll do anything it takes.
Yeah. Back to the start of Pixie. Where did the name come from? I sense from the laughter there's going to be an interesting story here. But yeah, so where did the name come from? And the other thing I was going to say is, did the name come before you found the domain, or was this one of those things where you just went, shit, we're naming anything now just so we can find a domain that works?
Yeah, so between you and I and all these podcast listeners, I don't love our name. I did it because I threw up a landing page and was like, I need something.
Right.
And I was like, it's magic, it's pictures, it's like the fairy that helps you. Bang, right. Done.
That was it.
If I have my time, and that was it, and now you can't go back. Yeah. I mean, you can go back, but you can't really go back.
No.
And so when you ask me, I kind of cringe.
Yeah. There's some big brands that have renamed, but yeah, you're right. It's a challenge doing that.
It is a challenge doing that. I think, and everybody on this podcast can hear it, that I think over time, like Adobe has multiple products, we will have multiple products.
Yeah.
So Adobe is Adobe, but they have Photoshop, they have InDesign, they have, you know, like Business Catalyst. I know they close that one down, but they have a lot of different products.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's something, that's the direction that we would take. I don't really, we do have a good brand name and brand presence in the ecosystem, and I don't think it's right to change it right now.
I don't dislike it. I think it's quite fun, and you know, when you've actually just drawn the link there between its magic and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I go, I kind of get that now. It's that perhaps didn't jump out at me in the first instance. And probably, and this is strange, because I've never offered a criticism like this to anybody else's business or on the podcast. I'm normally trying to stay neutral. But obviously, I see as you would, I see a lot of these, I see a lot of good online tools that people are using. And I think probably from my perspective, the only thing that I think you guys are missing is actually bringing that brand alive in the in the website. I think
interesting because we're working on that right now.
Right, cool. Because I look at the way MailChimp do it, and you know we all begrudgingly say, oh yeah, we're all using MailChimp, and the way that MailChimp do it, the way that Slack do it, we've started using for a couple of clients Drip. The whole ecosystem feels like it's filled with their personality, whereas yours kind of doesn't a little bit.
Well, that's exactly what we're working on with our designer at the moment, is bring it more alive. So I'm glad you've said that. otherwise, I would be wasting money and time.
Please don't hate me, Holly. Please don't hate me.
No, not at all. So I'm really excited. I'm going to contact you afterwards and see what you think.
Cool. I'm excited to see it now because it's good. It's really cool that that's something you guys have identified to sort of bring alive. But I think it's really
important. I think no one tells you when you're starting out to have a good and strong brand.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know it's hard because you don't really value it at the beginning. It doesn't necessarily give you customers straight away. It doesn't necessarily give you return on investment straight away. But I think it's one thing. I was speaking to the founder of another e-commerce platform, and he said to me, I wish we branded or focused on branding a lot earlier on. And they've been around now for about 12 years, and they only rebranded, not in terms of name, but in terms of image, look and feel, probably 3 years ago.
Right.
So, and he was like, we just didn't spend enough time or attention on it. And that's his one regret.
And to be honest with you, MailChimp only did last year. I mean, they kept the chimp, but they, you know, they changed the whole look and feel. And I think the other thing they did was they changed their language, the way that they talk and the way that they, I think that's another thing that a lot of online startups don't get right, is that personality, yes, is brand, it is color, it is logo and etc., but it's also language. And I think if nothing else, Slack have taught us that in the last two or three years, that you can really bring a brand alive just by what language you're using.
Yeah, we're doing our language as well, so we're doing it simultaneously.
It's so gonna be I'm interesting.
Really excited that you brought this up, because I'm going to show you get your criticism on it.
just just to add to that, just, you know, not necessarily about yourself, but when people look at Slack, I think it's the attention to detail from Slack is that when you download their updates to their app on your phone, they are often really quite comical. You know, somebody with a sense of humor is actually writing them. And I don't think every brand has to have a sense of humor like that, because that's really hard to do, but just little bits of personality here and there make a massive difference to, you know, to communication with the end user.
Yeah, it's true.
Back to the, I think the other thing I wanted to ask you about was the whole technical side of Pixie. And two questions here. Did you have any kind of tech experience building a product like this? I mean, I know you've got e-commerce experience prior to this, but any real sort of tech experience? And if you did or didn't, how did you kind of take that forward? And then how was it actually built? What sort of, I guess the question is, what sort of language was it built in? All those kind of things, the technical side of it.
So I didn't really have any technical experience. I did, prior to Pixie, try to build three websites. One I outsourced to an agency in Sydney when I was quite young, and that was a failure. One I outsourced to a web development offshore company, and that was a failure. All I understood was what I needed to build, but not how to build it. And then I was so frustrated because I had spent so much money the first two times that the third time I actually built a WordPress website for an online marketplace that I built. And that was good because it sort of forced me to build something basic and go out and get a customer. And then with Pixie, because I had that initial experience, I put up the first landing page again using WordPress. So it did teach me those small things, you know, about putting up a page on a website on a server and hosting it. But the one thing that I couldn't do was we didn't have any login system for our customers. And then I got a developer to put in a PayPal button. So our first website was literally a form with your name, email address, and link to your Dropbox. And then we would edit the photos and send them back, and they would pay via PayPal, or I'd send them in PayPal invoice.
And you were editing them manually? So somebody was doing
that.
Yeah,
so my rule to myself was never to edit any photos myself. So I'd find designers online and get them to help. And now we have engineering team, still very small engineering team, but Sergey, our lead engineer, has built the site in Node.js, JavaScript, and Angular on the front end. And he's built most of it. And I was speaking to a friend today, actually, who's like, it's amazing how much Sergey's built, because really he has built all of our app integrations, our web app integrations. We don't have a mobile app yet, but we are mainly focused on web apps at the moment, just because we can integrate directly with the store.
And I don't mean this to sound in any way kind of rude or condescending, but how much of that do you understand? Because, and I say that from having gone through tech startups myself, and I understood none of it. And I actually regret not understanding any of it. I mean, I'm never going to be able to program in Node.js. I mean, I can barely write HTML, but I wish I'd kind of got a bit more immersed in actually understanding the tech side of it.
Yeah, I would like to learn more. I think it's important to understand, like, what are your core skill sets and how can you add the most value. I think what's interesting about my mind is that I understand how things could work and where could we have shortcuts, and I'll ask particular questions or think about other ways in which we could do something. Not that I understand the technical side, but I can ask an engineer, well, have you thought about doing this, this, or this? Or why do you want to do it that way? And then understanding why they want to do it that way and be like, oh, but you haven't thought about this thing that we need to do. And then they'll be like, oh, yeah. And then so I don't understand the technical, but I understand how something should work. It's a very weird concept. But, it would be great if I understood more, because then I could really check for things to see if there's a more efficient way of doing something. But at least if I ask the questions why they're doing it a certain way, that really, I find that really helps to challenge them.
I think there's a balance, obviously, between you learning too much and then not trusting the people that are telling you what's happening as well. Because if you continue to kind of undermine them by educating yourself, you're kind of going, what's the point of having people here that?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, last three questions. I normally ask people about their favorite brands, but with you, I am obviously going to ask you about your favorite e-commerce store. And it can be one of your clients if you want it.
It's not going to be one of my clients, but...
But I'd like to know what kind of, excites you when you look at e-commerce stores.
That's a challenge. But you know who I do absolutely love, and I've only realized this because I've moved and bought so many appliances, is Appliances Online. They are incredible in that... They have such a wide range, and if you need a fridge tomorrow, you can call them now, or you can jump online store. You can see if it's in stock to your postcode, and they would deliver it the next day. The other thing is, if you call them up and say, I really need this, they will do anything they possibly can to get it on a truck. They will come and deliver it to you. So a lot of it is around the customer service, but it's also around the logistics. How do you have and deliver a fridge within less than 24 hours to somebody? You have to have that distribution. And they also have a very good customer service team in terms of the telling you the differences between appliances, because you can look at a million different fridge images, and I know I sell images, but in something like this, it is a challenge because what is the true difference between a Westinghouse fridge and a Simpson fridge that is probably around the same price? Like, you don't really know, whereas they can quickly look. I think that they need to build a sort of comparison side by side that highlights those things, but I know that they're constantly trying to improve their technology. So that would probably, right now, that's one of my favorite stores.
Right. But obviously you're not buying fridges every day. So is there any e-commerce stores that you use like on a regular basis that you go back to for, consumer products or food or fashion or anything like that that's a sort of a must visit for you?
The other one is... for my dog, I use Pet Circle.
Okay.
So that's probably one that I go back to. They have a recurring subscription model for certain products, so like dog food or something, or dog treats, and you can select how often you would like the product. And they also have a pretty fast turnaround in terms of shipping. The longest I've ever waited is 2 days, which I think is great. And then the other one that I really like is Adore Beauty.
Okay.
So Adore Beauty sell beauty products. And you, again, you can order on subscription. So they know, for example, if you buy shampoo, you can order on subscription. But they have this really good thing. If you spend over $50, not only get free shipping, you get to choose 3 free samples. And then if you spend over $120, they send you a full goodie bag of products. Right. And I am that sucker who tries and who doesn't buy stuff necessarily for the packaging. But if I try a little sample and I like it, I will buy it. And I think that's worked really well for their business.
Okay.
Well, it's worked on me.
clearly they're doing something right there. So,
yeah.
Okay. Second to last question. What have you got? What's planned for the rest of 2019 for you? Anything, any sort of features? You've mentioned the sort of rebranding, the repositioning of Pixie, but anything else that's coming that's new?
Yeah, we are really looking at improving our product for our user and seeing what else we can automate in their store for them. I'm not going to say more, but that's our direction is how can we help our customers do more than just their photos?
Okay, secretive. Right. Okay, I get it. Very last question then. If everybody wants to talk to you around, either e-commerce or also that sort of distributed and remote teams concept, or they just want advice, or they just want to say hello, or they just want to connect, what's the best way to do that with you?
So I'm on Twitter and I'm HollyCCC, and I'm on LinkedIn, Holly Cardew, and otherwise you can email me, holly@pixie.com.
Cool. Awesome. Holly, thank you very much for your time today. It's been very eye-opening. We have a few e-commerce clients ourselves that we are working through things with. So it's really kind of most of the questions I've asked you are personal questions about our clients to see if that can help us. But but really, really appreciate your time being on the show and good luck for the rest of the year.
Thanks for having me.
That's pretty much it from episode number 60 of the Paper Planes podcast. Once again, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being part of it. Please rate and review us on iTunes. Please share this out amongst people that you think might be interested. Otherwise, we shall see you next week.